Now, everyone knows that Zendaya is Michi. But what this podcast presupposes is, what if she isn't?
Zendaya is Michi. And LeBron James is Gwangi. Danny DeVito is Dorgo. Zendaya is Michi. Gina Rodriguez is Coca. And Zendaya is Michi.
Folks, welcome to an episode of the Welcome to Your Carlson Years Scotch Cast, aka Fifth Liners. And we're also Traffic Trap House. And you know what? This week, this coming week, regular season hockey is back in the NHL. And you've got myself, Luke, and your boy Verada here to break down the biggest Senators news stories of the day. Like, is Zendaya Michi? Is Danny DeVito Dorgle?
I think preseason is pretty much done. The most important thing is they beat the Leafs back-to-back and then proceeded to lose almost every other game. Although they had a very entertaining game yesterday against Montreal, where I see we're in our sweet spot as Sens fans right now, where like it couldn't matter less if they actually win the game, just so long as we kind of like trolls them and there's a good fight and Duclair scores a highlight reel goal, and we can just get a little bit under their skin, and then
yeah,
and then if we lose, it doesn't even really matter.
Exactly. When you're operating from the place that this is a lost season, like everything else is house money. Like, and I think the fan base, or at least what I'm seeing on Twitter, is like definitely ready for the regular season. You know, it would have been way better if those points you'd taken off the Leafs or that points you'd taken off the Habs actually meant something. And the fact that it's kind of like preseason, you're like, man, why can't we troll them for real? You know, that speaks to really like how kind of chomping at the bit the fan base is to, you know, really go out there and annoy these assholes.
Yeah, I am really surprised by how quickly we got back on board. And I gotta ask you about this because, you know, Shabbat re-signed, Colin White re-signed, and it feels to me like I really thought there was no recovering from last year. Like, people were out. They were like done with this team. It felt like every glimmer of hope would just turn into, it doesn't matter how good that player is, we're never going to re-sign them. It just felt like there was the arena deal falls through. Like, there was just nothing. Like, we couldn't even look forward to a better jersey. Like, it just seemed like
the assistant GM had like propositioned a bus driver.
It was
remember that? That was there's just a bunch of bad stuff that happened last year on and off the ice.
Like, every, you know, the GM says he's not going to fire the coach and then fires him like 7.5 hours later. Like, there was nothing to live for when it comes to Senators fandom. And then I have been personally, I don't know whether to feel encouraged by this or just puzzled to see how quickly, like, people paid for billboards. That's fucking bananas, right? We went from paying for billboards to like getting deeply invested in the team signing an enforcer to a two-way deal because we're so ready for the regular season to start in what is clearly a lost season. So I gotta ask you, like, do you feel after having re-signed Shabbat and White, like, that pull, that like familiar tug to like get back involved and actually have some hope here?
Yeah, I gotta say, I am definitely still feeling the urges, and I have to like consciously convince myself, you know, it's stupid to do a tweet that's like, oh, the Senators should sign Jason Pominville to a contract now that he's on waivers. Like, this stuff does not matter. Like, Scott Sabourin, that should just be a story that's good because a guy played in the AHL for a long time and is finally getting his cup of tea into Big Show because the Senators coach knew him in Oshawa. And like, I'm really trying to find it within myself to just look on the nice human interest side of that story instead of being like, that guy's taking Logan Brown's spot. What's he doing? Why isn't the lineup optimized? Error does not compute. And so the more I can just kind of, you know, stay calm, stay zen, you know, it's going to be a real battle, but I think I have it in me to just, you know, accept the things I cannot change. And yeah, that's everything. That's it. Just, and anytime I get mad, just think about the draft picks.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, okay, this was going to be the season where hockey might actually be more enjoyable because, like, I would just let my eyes go lazy and just watch the game and enjoy, like, just go fully zen and enjoy the, like, flow of a, like, well-contested hockey game that we lose 5-1.
Yeah.
And just, you know, what I was trying to do was put myself in the mindset of, like, a San Diego Padres fan. You know, like, what the fuck is the point of being a Padres fan? It's like sitting outside. It's San Diego. It's beautiful. It's watching baseball. Like, who gives a fuck, right? Like, they're terrible. It doesn't really matter. And, like, there's got to be an Ottawa Senators hockey equivalent of that, which is like, okay, I'm just going to reconnect with my pals. I'm going to enjoy the craft beer renaissance. I'm going to, like, enjoy the way hockey is, like, woven into the social fabric of my country or whatever I have to do to keep me from actually getting invested in the day-to-day of this team.
Yeah.
And I really thought people were going to get there too, where they're just going to be like, yeah, you know who's great? Kachuk. And then just, like, watch some Brady Kachuk and not really care about the outcome of the game. And then now I see people are getting back into their old, like, their old ways of, what are we doing with that fourth line roster spot? It just, like, could not matter less. Like, this team is going to finish last by, like, 20 points no matter what we do. So I guess I'm surprised. I guess I'm somewhat impressed. You know, like, people really fucking like hockey and they really like this team. But there's a part of me that's just like, Melnick is learning from this, that, like, people will come back no matter what you do. Like, if you own a hockey team in a Canadian city, like, there's really nothing you can do to lose people for good.
I mean, with the exception of, like, I don't know, three people, like, I think most Senators fans want to like the team. And that was always kind of, like, the weird thing about the team's marketing, is that, you know, you kind of wanted to just to take these guys aside and be like, yo, we want to like the team. Why are you making this so hard? Why are our jerseys terrible? Why are you trading Mark Stone? Why are you letting the arena deal fall through? Like, anything that is good, like, turns to ashes in our mouth. You don't even need to do that. Like, it doesn't, just as long as it doesn't turn to ashes, like, if it just stays, like, slightly greasy cardboard, it's fine.
Just be the Padres, you know? Yeah. Like, what, I don't know what the Padres do. The Padres certainly don't try to win, but they're not, like, burning anything down. They're just, like, they're just a baseball team, you know, in San Diego.
I think it's good to get to the sort of kind of, like, bad Catholic type zone with that, where you're like, yeah, I only really go to hockey games on holidays. It's been a long time since, you know, I've gone to a playoff game. But, like, if people ask you who your team is, you're still like, oh no, I've been a Senators fan since birth, and mostly because my parents, I was baptized into it, and, like, it's always part of you, even if you're not, you know, actively practicing life as a Senators fan.
There's a point of pride. There's a point at which being this bad becomes a point of pride. Like, it becomes like the guy in Da Vinci Code who whips himself with chains or something, where you're like, you're never going to lose me from this. Melnick is just, like, so toxic. And you know, the stuff around Randy Lee was so embarrassing and brutal that, like, they really pushed it. You know, there was a while there where, like, I definitely So I live in the Bay Area, and like my love of hockey is kind of like quirky for my American friends. And there was a point where I was like not bringing up my quirky little hobby there.
You know, yeah.
People go, how are things going with the Senators anyways? And you're like, well, the assistant GM is being sued for molesting a boy. You know, it's very depressing. It's very, yeah. very hard to get excited about this. But anyways, getting away from molestation and getting back to those re-signings. So are you as surprised as I am that we got Shabbat on what looks like a really fucking good deal?
If I am 100% honest, I am completely floored. I never thought in 1,000 years this would happen. I had no intention of even hoping that such a deal would be signed for so long at such a good rate. Like, it's literally beyond my wildest dreams what mm-hmm. they got Shabbat signed to. I don't know what to do with my hands.
You know, this Shabbat re-signing, I think for me, for once and for all, proves that the offer sheet option is not real. Like, it needs to be tweaked in the CBA if the players really want the offer sheet to be a function that drives up player salaries and increases player choice, then they need to insist on tweaking it so that maybe the compensation isn't so onerous or something. Because Shabbat is exactly the type of player you should be targeting with an offer sheet. He was an RFA, obviously. I think he was offer sheet eligible before they signed that deal. And Ottawa is not in a position to retaliate. You know, like yeah. they certainly can't match an offer sheet that's bonus heavy, that's signing bonus heavy. And it's not like Ottawa's going to turn around and be like, well, fine, we'll sign your RFA to some crazy deal, because they literally can't pay for it. So I have no idea why a team like, oh, I don't know, like the Toronto Maple Leafs or something. Like, I know that they were up against the cap, but they need defense. They completely screw like a division rival right as they're launching their rebuild. You know, there's any number of teams with, you know, or Colorado Avalanche, whatever. They have tons of cap room. They've got lots of young people signed on reasonable deals. They could totally use a Thomas Shabbat. And the fact that no team went there, to me, just proves that the offer sheet is just like not a real thing.
So I'm going to have to hit you with the wild actually on this one.
Oh, was he not offer sheet eligible?
Not until next season.
Oh, okay.
So they actually signed him to a long-term deal, like a season before they even needed to, which is even more bananas. Like, when was the last time the Senators did something proactive rather than just letting a guy get to
the place where
it's like, well, I guess we have to trade him now.
I am tempted to edit all that out because I was wrong, except I still want to bring up the fact that, like, I still feel like there's a lot of talking that happens behind the scenes, and like a GM could talk to an agent or something and be like, you know, we're prepared to come forward with an offer sheet next season if you just hold out for like one more year. I don't know to the degree to which that's like, you know, really, really ever happens. But I could imagine, like, let's say a team like Philadelphia, who's always trying to take that next step and has lots of money to throw around, just dropping a note to Shabbat's agent being like, you know, we're ready for next summer if you are, and like leaving it at that or something. And the fact that Shabbat re-signed for a long-term deal too, on what I think is going to be a really reasonable deal 5 or 6 years out, really surprising. So, you know, I can see already the media analysts are spinning it a little bit, saying that this is like the rubber stamp on Ottawa's vision. I don't know about that. I mean, it's somebody offers you $64 million and you don't have to move or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I think that's also a big plus.
I do like the fact that Ottawa is going to be basically paying Shabbat a lot of money in his prime. He's 22 now, and I guess he'll be 30 or 31 when his contract is up. So, like, that's what you want to do. I guess the kind of finding the cloud in the silver lining here is that maybe this was the lesson that Mark Stone taught them, was like, if you've got a guy you're 80% sure on, like, don't bridge them.
Right.
Like, Mark Stone would have been a guy that you were like, that's a guy who should get a 8-year, $64 million contract. Right. And instead they bridged him for 2 years and now he's in Vegas.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if back when they were negotiating that Stone deal, if there was something else going on, like if Stone wouldn't do more than a bridge deal. Because like clearly they were on board with like him as a player. They drafted him, they developed him. You know, if you're gonna commit to anybody, it's Mark Stone. And they really put themselves behind the eight ball with him and Duchesne and Carlson all being up at the same time.
Yeah.
Well,
but it's better now because they signed Thomas Chabot and Colin White.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the Colin White deal? Like 4.75, 6 years. He's 22 years old.
I think it's a deal he'll have to grow into a bit, but I also feel like he's the sort of player who's kind of like a rich man's Pajot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's got a kind of very underrated defensive game. And so it's not the sort of deal that you'd give to your first line center, because he's not going to be your first line center. But if he gets to come in and be like the next Pajot slash new Mike Fisher type guy, that who's kind of maybe a defensive checking line specialist who can chip in with the odd point here or there, like I'm into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's a guy who we've kind of like all liked because we watched him get drafted. We've been really hoping that he'd worked out with that he'll work out. And so I think indications are there that he's definitely going to be a full-time player in the NHL, and you know, why not get that guy signed at a reasonable deal?
Yeah, I think they signed him to like the platonic ideal of a 50-point player deal. Mm-hmm. You know, like they gave him the term and the money that you would expect of a player who you hope is going to score 50 points in year in and year out. And you know, you're never going to necessarily expect him to score. He's not going to have a 75-point season, and you're not expecting him to. You know, he might have the odd 40-point season. And, you know, you'd sort of put pressure on him to get back up, to get that back up to 50 points. But he's always that like 2-3 guy in the lineup down the middle.
He did just have a 40 point season, and yeah. Like blessed be the child that does that in their age 21 season in the NHL, right? Like, okay, maybe he's on a kind of depleted Senators roster, but like, I don't know. Let's see you play second line center and get 41 points.
I mean, it's nice to see that. So in his second season, he gets 20 games and puts up 6 points in like limited minutes.
Broke his wrist early on in the season.
Yeah, and then it's good to see him get like he had about 16 minutes a game in his third season, played 70 games, 41 points. Like that's a pretty nice jump between your age 21 and age 22 season.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're betting on his upswing, and you know, I don't know if he's more of a third line guy than a second line guy, but you're paying him basically what third liners are going to make in 3 or 4 years anyways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And if I can get into my nerd chat here, I think it's kind of accepted amongst analysts that like a player's statistical prime is basically age 24 to age 26. And so for both White and Chabot, I like that they've signed them like through their prime, and you're like, okay, we're gonna give these guys their money when they're at their best, rather than pulling a Bobby Ryan and trying to pay for a guy's past performance.
Right.
Oh, man. Which to be fair, you know, is what we would have had to do with Carlson and Duchesne and even Mark Stone to a degree. So like if this is a version of the Senators being smart, which is signing their young good players to long-term contracts early on instead of bridging them, like I'm into it.
Bobby Ryan, what do you think what's your over under on him this year? He had 42 points last year. 15 goals, which was a nice little rebound from the 11 he scored the year before. Do you think he's just like done, like not even NHL?
Like, no, I think he's actually, I think he's still got it. I think he's still got the vision. I'm not sure about the hands anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess there's word on the street that he's really jibing with, jibing, is that a word?
Yeah.
Let's just say that he's getting along well with DJ Smith.
Jibing is a good thing. I thought jibing was a bad thing.
No, see, I'm just making stuff up because I don't do English, but I think he likes the new coach. I guess 48 points would be the over-under if you're trying to find some optimism there. I mean, that was that's what he did in his first season in Ottawa, but he hasn't been there since 2016. So I don't know. It's Bobby Ryan, and he himself is like, you know, talking about getting passed over for A's or C's, and he's like, look, man, I don't care. I think he's well into his. I think he's like gonna set a good example for the kids, and then like go home at night and cash those checks. And
yeah,
you know, I think he's past the point of thinking he's gonna be a serious contributor to the team at this point.
So, have you been watching the preseason games?
I watched a couple of the Toronto games, but I fell off after that. Although I did go to the rookie tournament in Belleville.
Oh yeah. So anything jump out at you there?
At the time, I thought that Logan Brown looked like the sort of guy who really wanted to make the team. He wasn't quite at the Mark Stone levels of obviously better than everyone else, but I thought he was clearly the best Senators rookie, and you know, centered the first line. I also thought Jonathan Davidson was sneaky good, very smart player. He's a guy to keep an eye on. I thought Artem Anisimov had a good nose for the net and the puck, but kind of needs to go to the Jean-Gabriel Peugeot school of being a bowling ball on legs.
Is Davidson, do you think Davidson's going AHL, or is he done with Sweden?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know if he's. I think he's done with Sweden, but
I would like to see him in Belleville this year for sure. But mm-hmm. You know, I guess it depends on how much he's going to miss the meatballs.
I mean,
anyway, all this to say is that I watched all these players and was like, well, hopefully some of these guys make the team in Ottawa, and I don't think they did.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, if that's the case, then Belleville is going to have a good team this year, I think.
I feel really bad that Christian Wallanen is missing this opportunity because of that freak accident. I feel like I was really excited to see him this year. You know, he's right in his – this is his shot. He's 24 years old. He's on a really high-value deal. There's literally no one ahead of him on the depth chart on defense, I guess, except for Zaitsev. I feel bad that he's not getting this opportunity. I think he would have been a lock and could have shown some pretty exciting things. Yeah, I can't think of a player that would be, you know, like last year when Peugeot was hurt like right away to start the season and he was out for most of the season. You know, you miss a guy like Peugeot, but in terms of like opportunities, Peugeot is never going to get bounced up much higher than occasionally playing second center.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Wallanen here has an opportunity to basically like play with Shabbat or play with be the like left side D to pin down with like a DeMello or something like that. And you know, there's an opportunity to play with to have a Brännström, Shabbat, and Wallanen as your three left side D. Like, that's not bad on a team where you basically don't care if you get scored on five times a game because it's
yeah
season.
Like, that's a decor that would low-key get kind of nice with it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny looking at the Sens depth chart. On the left-hand side, you have Brännström, Shabbat, and then Wallanen if he wasn't hurt, and then Borowiecki is also left side. And on the right side, you have Zaitsev, Hainsey, DeMello, and Golubev. So, like, Ottawa seems to have...
Sorry, what was that last one?
Is it Golubev? Cody Golubev?
No, try it. Sorry, again?
Golubev.
Let me hear the music in it.
Golubev.
Bravo.
Is there another pronunciation of that?
No idea. I'm going to let you go on that. I'm going to let you cook on that one.
It's like an Icelandic stew.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I mean the Sens are pretty loaded on the left hand D side, so it could have been a lot of fun to see where that went. And now we're gonna have to watch Boro again,
I'm over my Borough dislike at this point. Like I've full on got Stockholm syndrome with Borough, where I'm like, he's good to me now. Like,
you know what? He's a
why not?
He's a faithful partner.
Why not Borough? Yeah,
he's a good boyfriend. I'm fine. Yeah, he's a faithful partner.
Yeah, don't be afraid to settle, folks.
And then you know who else has looked really good is Connor Brown, who came over in that Zaitsev trade.
Yeah, I think Connor Brown and Tyler Ennis might surprise Sens fans just because we associate being on the Leafs with being bad. But I could see those guys chipping in with some timely contributions this season. Honestly, so I think the Senators are going to win some games by accident this year and then just be bad because the goaltending and like bottom six are going to be garbage.
Yeah.
But I bet the top six can hang.
I mean I don't think we've ever really like dove into the Zaitsev deal, maybe a little bit on the last podcast. But yeah, Connor Brown's looking really good. He's 25. I don't know if he's going to like by the time the team is ready to compete again, he's an RFA next year. So I'm not really sure what the play is in terms of bringing in a guy like Connor Brown. He feels like a stopgap until the team is good again. You know, part of me thinks, and I know this goes against my whole like Zen be a San Diego Padre fan like mentality, but part of me sort of wishes that in the Zaitsev deal, we'd instead taken a Leafs prospect instead of a guy who's going to be ready to walk by the time the team is ready to play again. But in the meantime, you know, he's a young guy. He's going to get a shitload of minutes in Ottawa. So, you know, it's nice to see when we trade for guys and they know we're going to be terrible this year that they don't just give up.
I mean, I do think it was kind of encouraging to see the camp be relatively competitive. I mean, I guess that's the argument for bringing on like quote unquote veterans to fill out the roster is to give the young guys something that they feel like they have to compete against and that they're just not going to be anointed, you know, third line center automatically. Logan Brown, you slacker.
So, I mean, what's kind of funny is that Connor Brown is the same age as Chris Tierney, but I don't associate that with those guys with being the same age because Tierney's...
I don't even associate Chris Tierney with being on the Ottawa Senators.
I'm sure he prefers
it
that way.
Who is that guy? Yeah. Do you know what he looks like? No clue.
I think he prefers it that way. And then, of course, you got Mikhail Bodker, who is still alive.
Are you sure?
I think, like, can you imagine if he just didn't come back from the summer?
No, because I don't even know what it's like to have him on the team.
And, like, nobody notices that, like, someone with the Senators, like, looks at their own cap-friendly page. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Chris Tierney, Mikhail Bodker, Marian Gaborik. I'm like, who are you? Do you go here? Who is this guy on my team?
Poor Gaborik.
Yeah, Marian Gaborik. I haven't heard that name in a while, huh? Well, I think about that guy constantly.
So speaking of veterans, this is the year that Burrow's buyout is off the books. We've got four more years of Dion Phaneuf. But other than that, you know, our like 5 years of unprecedented success is there is something that I feel pretty hopeful about when it comes
you
to
can
our
feel
rebuild.
It coming.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's for me, it's the draft picks and also all the UFAs that are coming off the books this coming year. This is the last year Craig Anderson's under contract. This is the last year Ron Hainsey's under contract. This is the last year Mikhail Bodker is under contract. This is the last year Mark Borowiecki's under contract.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're going to do with it. Maybe we'll just hoard it for the future, but
Brady. Brady Tkachuk, 8-year deal. Give him
Shabbat. Yeah, actually, that's a great point. All those guys have to chip in, throw some cap space in the hat for our boy Brady.
So here's the thing that makes me most hopeful about the Senators' rebuilding prospects. It feels to me that the usual arc of a rebuilding team is that they think they're good and they have a bunch of really expensive veterans that are over the hill and they have one really bad bottoming out season where they realize they're bad and they draft their, you know, cornerstone, very good blue chip prospect. But up until that moment, or up until about two-thirds of the way through the season, they didn't think they were rebuilding. So now you have this team that has a really young, good player, and he's surrounded by mediocrity, and the team has to pivot from contending to rebuilding. And that over the course of the next like 2 to 3 years, when that really good player's on his entry-level deal, they are like trying to shed contracts, trying to get draft picks and prospects, and just being terrible, right? And that really good player doesn't have depth around him, and it's really hard to draft depth. Like it just takes a long time. You know, the players you're drafting in the fourth or fifth round, they might be NHL caliber, they might not, but you're not going to know for a few years. And so by the time the team is actually good, you're already in a point where you have to pay this cornerstone player a really, at least on his RFA deal. And, you know, you look at basically like the Leafs, like they're in like year one or two of their window, and they're already paying like whatever, $30 million for three forwards. Ottawa has that reversed, where they have like a ton of really interesting prospects, a lot of whom are going to be NHL players and some of whom might not be. They have some really good players who aren't necessarily franchise players like Brady Tkachuk, but they're going to be like amazing complementary players. And this is the year they can add that franchise player. So they can add a franchise player right when they're starting to like their upward swing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels really good to know that like if they end up drafting like a Lafreniere, they can add him to a team that has Shabbat locked down. White, you got Brown and Batherson, Brännström, Tkachuk, and then a whole shitload of like interesting could be anything players who might end up being good complementary players on the team, and they can sort of grow up together. And so Ottawa doesn't have that thing where they like draft Taylor Hall and then just like punch him in the face for 7 years straight. He's like an incredible player who just like never gets to play in the postseason because like they just never figured out how to get depth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think about how many times like a team like Philadelphia or something, because they refuse to rebuild, they will draft a really amazing player and then just, they're just exposed to terrible losing for years and years and years. I feel like Ottawa is positioned really well. Now, all of this falls apart if they lose the draft lottery. And they end up drafting like third or fourth.
But. Just who's to say? I mean, first of all, it's a deep draft this year, It's probably a bad idea to get too attached to the idea of drafting first overall, because that requires so many things to go wrong and then go right. So accept the idea of top five being good, and then, you know, let God take care of the rest.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking about what you were saying. As you were saying it just now, just like how the Senators have kind of like accidentally building from the bottom up instead of the top down, which is, I guess, strange in the context of the NHL. And I think if you believe that that is both happening and good, you're left with only one conclusion, which is it was actually good the Senators didn't have their first round pick this past year.
Yeah,
because like the what you're seeing now, where we have a decided, you know, two-tier rebuild where they draft the bottom six first and then draft for the top six this year and in 2021, they would not have done that if it weren't for the fact they didn't have a first round pick this past draft.
Yeah. I mean, make no mistake, I don't think any of this is by design. I think it's like I don't think they were like, you know, this is clearly the bet. We're gonna reverse the usual formula of like drafting our franchise guy and then, you know, exposing him to losing for years. We're gonna reverse that by exposing all of our depth guys to losing, and then adding our like Alex Daigle like player, you know, at the right moment. I think, you know, they clearly fucked up with the whole loss of the first round pick, but. You know, I think the critics have been proven wrong about the Tkachuk pick. I know people were pretty, weren't like dead set against it, but had their doubts.
That's right. I remember it well.
And, you know, I think everyone's basically on board now that Tkachuk is like basically future captain of this team, regardless of whether or not he becomes like a cornerstone guy or just a complimentary guy. And I don't know, like it's possible that they end up like finishing last by a country mile and then like selecting fourth. That would be a bummer. You know, cause you really need that. I don't know how else they get that needle moving blue chip person.
They
gave away Stone. That was
You can draft, you can get lucky in the draft at any position, I guess is the long and short of it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's, you know, getting Carlson at whatever it was, 16, getting Stone in the sixth round. Like we've seen these sorts of things before. Mike Hoffman in the fourth round or wherever he was. But yeah, I do understand that, like, in terms of like being both like extremely projectable and good, like you do really want that top three pick.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, basically they've got this is their year, right? Where they've got their own first round pick. San Jose's pick isn't going to be very high and they got some second rounders. But other than that, you know, this year and like next year, after that, people, I think, start to become a little bit pissy about the team being terrible. Like, I think around 2022, that's when people start to say, all right, I'm tired of watching a losing team.
Yeah, I'm ready for unprecedented success now. Please, yeah. Please allow the success to wash over me.
I mean, clearly, if we're already getting the sort of opinions we're getting about Sabourin now, and it's like, guys, we're in possibly year one of a rebuild, maybe year two. You know, we can't be this invested in a fourth line enforcer. Like, we'll never make it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all, honestly, like, I think Sabourin did himself a solid by, you know, picking the correct Montreal Canadian to punch in the face repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah. He knows how to play. He played the right notes.
He did. So, you know, he only plays one note, but he knows where to put it in the solo.
At extreme volume.
I like the fact that they noted that Tkachuk went to that show with Thomas Chabot and Colin White. I just like it that like the young Sens are hanging out together, you know?
Yeah.
and part of hanging out is just like sometimes you and the boys gotta go see Elton John.
Just don't hang out in a cab. That's being filmed. Speaking of which, Chris Weidman, rest in peace. He was put on waivers from Florida. That was a precipitous fall. I mean, I know we have a tendency of basically going all in on depth players that no one else gives a shit about. And we you know, we see something in them that nobody else sees. But I really thought Weidman would get a shot somewhere.
He's like the 11th straight player that the Sens, like the smart Sens Twitter guys have like really liked, and in which I would include myself, to be clear. Like, this is a self roast. But yeah, he's like the 12th straight guy who we're like, this guy never got a fair shot. Go somewhere else, and then just immediately crashes and burns even worse than he did in Ottawa. I think the original guy for this was Shane Prince. Mm-hmm. But since that time, we've also seen it happen to like Eric Condra and Patrick Weirkosh. And I guess Reginald Quayson, and now Chris Weidman.
Oh, what's his name?
I'm starting to get worried. I'm starting to think that maybe I'm not a good judge of talent.
The ultimate for that for a little while was Pumpel.
Oh my God! Yeah,
yeah. He was the guy who, like, we just completely fucked up his development, and then he scored. Did he score a hat trick, like, with the Rangers when he was called up once and then just promptly stopped existing?
Yes, that's right. Last thing that happened to him was that he was on Detroit, where he played 8 games. Oh, and that's on Detroit. Like,
yeah,
not exactly a super deep team over there. So, yeah, he's 25 now, and I don't know, best of luck in Switzerland, I guess, Matt Pumpel.
Poor Matt Pumpel. Remember how excited we were when we traded up into the first round and took him? I was like, man, 3 first round picks.
This is baby.
Rebuild finished.
3 first round picks. What could go wrong? These guys always work out.
And then who's the other guy? I remember I was like pissed off because I was at a wedding during the draft when we had three first round picks, and I was so excited. I couldn't believe that we got Zibanejad, Pumple, and then the other guy whose like name is I've completely forgotten now. But he was like captain material. I remember feeling like Brian Murray was a complete genius after that draft.
Stephen Nason.
Right. And I think Nason ended up on another team.
Yeah, because we traded him for Bobby Ryan, I think. Or was that someone else?
No, you're
No,
right.
it was, he was in the Bobby Ryan trade.
But then he ended up somewhere else after that as well. Like he went, oh, he plays for New Jersey now. And he actually played a full season for New Jersey 2 seasons ago. You know, he had 27 points, nothing crazy. He had 13 goals. That's not bad. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all. All
Cup of
right, Stephen
coffee.
Nason. And he played 41 games last year where he had 8 points, less good.
And now he's a UFA who will probably never play another game in the NHL.
Come home, Stephen Nason.
Yeah,
He
well,
never got a game in Ottawa.
it
That's
only
good.
seems right, you know, to like bring Stefan Nason back to the Senators, back to the team that drafted him. Imagine
Yeah.
how cool it would be to have Bobby Ryan and Stefan Nason.
Oh man, it'd be just it, both of them in their primes.
The lion and the lamb lying down together.
Oh, it would just be perfect. And then whoever Anaheim drafted with our first round pick,
Nick Ritchie.
get him somehow. Where's Nick
Unfortunately, I
Ritchie?
think Nick Ritchie's actually good, or
Oh.
like good enough to remain in the league
Oh
past the age of
shit.
25.
Let's take a look. Oh, Nick Ritchie looks weird.
Oh yeah, he looks like he's got the mumps at all times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's okay. 31 points. There's a lot of mediocre. Everyone in that Bobby Ryan deal ended up mediocre. Everybody lost. A lot of money went to a lot of mediocre
Aren't you
players.
forgetting about Jakob Silfverberg,
Oh yeah, he's good, actually.
though?
He's good. Although he never turned into that, like, I remember at the time people being like, he's gonna be a 40 goal scorer, like,
Oh, I remember that too.
you know, perennially. I mean, I love Jakob Silfverberg. He had some really good games in Ottawa, but
He wore that gold helmet in
oh
Sweden.
yeah, he's never scored more than 50 points.
No, never even more than 43.
Is that wrist shot though? That was great. Remember that was when Ottawa kicked the shit out of Montreal, and Silfverberg had one of my all-time favorite goals where he scored in one of the games where Ottawa kicked the shit out of Montreal in the playoffs, and then he didn't celebrate because it was like such a shitty weird goal. Like it was like this super weak wrist shot from like the hash marks,
Yep.
and he like shrugged and skated off the ice like it didn't happen. It was amazing. So come home, Jakob Silfverberg. Come home, Nick Ritchie. Come home, Stephen Nason. And I guess stay here, Bobby Ryan.
They should all live in the same house.
It'll be like that Japanese game show.
Yeah. Oh man. I what I'm feeling is that maybe we're just not very good judges of talent, and we should try to think less about how much we know about this, 'cause what if it's not actually that much?
I mean, it's gonna be a rough fucking season. I mean, when you think about sharing a division with Toronto, you know, fuck them, but they're fine. They're gonna be fine. You know, obviously their fan base is gonna eat them alive if they go like 5-5 for a bit, but they're gonna be fine. Boston's great. Buffalo eventually is gonna put it together, right? They like just at least by accident. Tampa and Florida, who's the ultimate like scary good this year team? Like, I can't really think of a division that you'd want to be in less than that one. You know, this is going to be a rough year for the lowest like salary team in the league to be in that division.
Just keep thinking about those draft picks, man.
I know. I know. If anything, they're helping us out. They're helping us out.
So I was thinking about going to the home opener next weekend, which I think is all you need to know about like where I'm at, is that I've officially decided that I don't hate the team enough to stay away. And also that, you know, my $30 for a single game in Ottawa is probably not going to be the thing that makes or breaks Melnick.
Yeah. You know, go enjoy hockey before it gets like claustrophobic and weird and going on for too long.
Yeah.
You know, the season's way too long. Enjoy it now while enthusiasm's high. It's against Toronto, right?
The opener's in Toronto and then the home opener's against the Rangers.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I get to see Mika Zibanejad.
Yeah, and you know, Rangers will have an interesting year. You see, who's the guy they drafted second overall?
Kako.
Yeah. And what's his face? This is why people come to this podcast.
I go to what's his face?
What's his face? You know, the guy, the biggest unrestricted free agent in the entire league, whatever his name was.
Panarin,
there you go. I was going to say Anisimov, which is, you know,
Ottawa Senators fans can only hold one Russian in their head at a time.
You know, the most sought after free agent in the league. Was it Panarin or Anisimov?
They also got Jacob Trouba.
Oh, yeah.
So the funny thing is that, like, the Rangers are currently the, like, smart choice for just being literally the shortest rebuild in history. They're like, all right, we've got Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider, Pavel Buchanovic, Kaapo Kakko, Jacob Trouba and Brady Shea, and like Henrik Lundqvist is still the ageless wonder in net. Let's go.
Man, let's hit the playoffs. And also, I don't feel like the Rangers are, you know, I feel like anytime somebody like an aunt or something who doesn't really know me, like buys me a hockey ticket, like for a birthday present or something, mm-hmm. odds are, you know, flip a coin, it's probably going to be Buffalo or Boston. Like, yep. That's just the way it goes. Rangers are not in that formula, you know, like that's a team I don't feel like we see that much, you know, outside of those playoff matchups. They're a team that I don't hate. I don't love. Lots of interesting players I'd like to see. Beautiful jerseys. Yeah, why not?
Do you want to relitigate the Mika Zibanejad trade right now?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so relitigating Mika Zibanejad trade. He's currently 26. He's got 3 years left at $5.35 million. We got Derek Brassard, who was pretty good for us for a couple years.
One and a half, I think, is the number of years he was good for. Technically, plural years, but
and we gave up like a second round pick or something as well, if I'm remembering correctly. And then eventually, we moved Brassard for a late first and Gustafsson. Do I have that right? Or a second and Gustafsson? I think it might have been
a second and Gustafsson sounds right.
Who at this point is still just like a very young goaltender. He could be anything. You know, Ottawa has like a weird amount of depth in net right now with like some interesting looking goalie prospects. So Gustafsson's sort of on the outside looking in. I'm not sure if he's like goalie of the future, but he's only 21, you know. And we ended up getting a pick for him. And Brassard basically is like out of the league.
Like, yeah, that guy dropped off the cliff fast.
I'm trying to remember where he signed. He went to Colorado, and now he's with the Islanders. Mm. So, yeah, who knows what's going on with Derek Brassard. I mean, what do you think? I kind of feel like Ottawa could use a Mika Zibanejad-style player right now.
Well, that's the thing, right, is at the time I defended the Derek Brassard trade, you know, pretty strongly. Because at the time the trade happened, I thought that Zibanejad and Brassard were, you know, roughly equivalent players. And I was kind of like, all right, so they wanted to pay less money to Brassard to do the same job as Zibanejad. And I guess the Senators did, you know, make it to a conference final on the back of that. But I don't know. I got to admit that that trade looks pretty bad now.
And,
it's Mika Zibanejad does seem like the sort of guy you just wish you had on the Senators at the moment.
74 points last year. That's rough.
Yeah, very strong defensive player too.
You know, playing 74 points, he's going to end up centering Kako and Panarin probably. So it's not a, it wouldn't be weird to see him break 80 or 90 points this year. Yeah, he's on an amazing deal. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of these things where it's like he's 26. He's got three more years left. If he were on the Senators right now on this deal, he would be an unrestricted free agent and the team would still probably be pretty bad. You know, like we wouldn't be getting amazing value for, like, we'd be getting value for him as a young player on a reasonable deal, but it's not like he would single-handedly like pull the team into the playoffs. Like all of this stuff that's happened, basically it's like, should they have traded him for picks and prospects instead of for Derek Brassard? But you know, we almost made it to the Stanley Cup final.
It's one of those deals that is justifiable in the context of Melnick being broke, right? Because it doesn't really make sense. It didn't really make sense for hockey reasons, and it definitely didn't make sense for futures reasons. And so you, in order to make it look good, you kind of had to like accept, the team has no money. So like, why not trade a guy who's going to be better in the future for a guy who's just as good now?
Well, I mean, the other weird thing,
it's
too,
like whatever is the opposite of the sunk cost fallacy is.
It's like when people compare, you know, Colorado or Tampa, like signing an RFA and being like, why couldn't a team like Toronto get those RFAs for the same deal? And it's just like it's just apples and oranges, right? So would Mika Zibanejad had signed a deal with an average of $5.3 million in Ottawa? Like, I mean, New York's tax structure is not that different from Ottawa, but like people tend to want to live in New York.
And, real talk though. I thought he signed that deal with Ottawa, but no, he didn't. You're right. He signed it with the Rangers, but at the same time, like, God damn, that's a good deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great deal that they signed him at, they signed him at 24 years old, I think, maybe even 23, and 5 years, $5.3 million. You know, they don't really, he's going to cash in pretty big, right? Like when he's done this deal, he'll still be in his 20s. You know, whether he re-signs with the Rangers or elsewhere, he'll be in his prime center, having played two or three years with one of the best scoring wingers in the league. He's going to put up some gaudy numbers over the next couple of years. Like, he's going to get paid. And, you know, Ottawa probably wouldn't have been able to use him in the same way. So, you know, part of me is like...
So what I'm hearing is that we've decided that the trade was good because it saved us from more heartache later.
Like, I just think it wouldn't have made a difference.
The situation would have been like, we would have had to trade Duchesne and Stone and Carlson and Zibanejad last year. So at least by trading sooner, like, we got that out of the way.
I mean, basically it's like, you know, we almost went to the Stanley Cup finals that one year. These things are rare. It's worth it. You know, like, I'm not saying that the trade made that happen, but it's hard to say, you know, what special sauce like produced that outcome, or if it was just like matchup heaven or goaltending or whatever. But, you know, like, I don't know if I'd be more satisfied if Ottawa had traded Zibanejad for like a first round pick and two prospects. You know, like, it's fine. They traded for a centerman who they wasn't really a huge upgrade, but was cheaper, and they had on a deal, and they went on a long playoff run. Like, okay, I can live with that.
Yeah. I mean, I will agree that playoff run takes the edge off, and I still look back on that with rose-colored glasses, just because it was probably the most fun I'd ever had watching hockey.
Well, it was also really, really nice to... Like, we got the matchup with the Bruins, and everyone was like, Bruins in five. And we were like, Ottawa won the season series.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, still like, no, like, Ottawa's going to get killed. And then, okay, so they win. I can't remember if they matched up with the Bruins first or what. But then they matched up with the Rangers, I think. And again, everyone was like, no way Ottawa has a chance. And it was like, I think they won that series too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't until they matched up with Pittsburgh that it was like, okay, this is going to be close. This is going to be a toss-up. And, you know, as we know, like, double overtime, game 7, could have gone either way, one goal away. and they would have had to play Nashville, who, like, that was a winnable series. I don't know. Like, that was incredibly satisfying to have been the underdog the whole way through.
So, yeah, it was great.
You know, fuck it. Trade me because of Banajad. You know, of all the trades, like, the trades that I, like, beat myself up about, not that I had anything to do with them, the Zibanejad one, for some reason, doesn't really, like, float to the surface. Trading Mark Stone and not getting a first-round pick, for some reason, that really, really bothers me.
Right, yeah.
Trading Mike Hoffman for Mikkel Bodker is something, like, I'll never understand.
Yeah, when you accept that you traded Mika Zibanejad for short-term gains, and in the short term you made Game 7 of a conference final, you're like, that trade worked out. That was the deal.
Yeah, yeah. Trading, yeah, the Stone trade is going to go down as, like, one of the, I mean, I hate to talk that way about Brännström. Like, hopefully he's good. But even if he ends up being, like, a pretty good top two center, he's not, you know, top five in the league the way that Stone is. So I can't even believe
not that. Only that, but Brännström plays defense. He's not even a center.
Did I say center? Yeah. Oh, now I'm disappointed.
Yeah, you're in for a rude awakening when you watch this, man.
What?
Like, you're like, why is he always so far back in the play?
He's out of position every single game. This guy doesn't even know what he's doing.
Why do we trade Stone for him?
So, I mean, yeah, out of all the bad trades, I mean, even Carlson, the Carlson trade is going to be something that haunts us for years. But the fact that we have multiple haunting trades that bad is kind of, yeah, Zibanejad, we shouldn't beat ourselves up about Zibanejad. It's, like, not even in the
same. Yeah, there's so many better options to get mad about, which brings us all the way back to, like, why this season's going to be good. Like, they're all out of bad trades.
That's true.
You know, like, Shabbat signed, Colin White signed, Brady Tkachuk is signed. We've already accepted that this year's, you know, part of the tank, so we're not going to go around trading first round draft picks for 27-year-olds or something. Like, it's fine. The worst is behind us, surely. Surely the worst is behind us.
Yeah, there's no way Ottawa can lose the expectation game this year. There aren't even players that they could trade at a loss that people would be, like, other than, they're obviously not going to trade Shabbat, you know, or Tkachuk. But that's basically it, you know. Like,
they've got so many options for players to trade just because they've got so many RFAs. Like, why not trade Craig Anderson to a team that needs goaltending at the deadline?
I want that for him too. You know, mm-hmm. I want him to play above his age 38 season, and if only to get traded to some team that was doing really well and then had injury problems. He can package up his racing simulator and go to Colorado or wherever.
Yeah, you can Twitch stream from anywhere. That's the beauty of the medium.
So, I mean, talking about goaltending, you've got Craig Anderson, 38, Anders Nilsson now on a 2-year deal at $2.6 million, totally reasonable. After that, I mean, what's the future of goaltending look like on this team? Joey Decord, Philip Gustafsson, Marcus Hogberg. Hogberg's the oldest of those at 24.
I'm all in on Mad Sogard at this point.
Oh yeah,
because I saw him at the rookie game in Belleville, where he was just on the bench mostly. And when he walked back into the dressing room, you could see him, like, have to, like, duck down under the door frame.
He's a big fucking dude.
I was immediately like, this guy's a man mountain. Like, he cannot develop fast enough. Let's go, Mad Sogard. I'm ready for just, like, an enormous human to just, like, stand in the middle of the net and have pucks bounce off him. Welcome to your Jagr years.
He was just drafted this year, right?
That's right.
Yeah, he was the one everyone was surprised to see them draft a goaltender. And I wonder if their super secret, ultra advanced analytics revealed him to be worth it at that pick, and they were surprised he fell that far.
I think amongst people in the know, he was regarded as the second best goaltender in the draft. So, I mean, I'm into it.
Behind the guy that Florida took?
Yeah, Knight, exactly. Was it
Jordan Knight or something?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down. I don't know. Like, I hope just some of these guys get some games.
How am I supposed to have educated opinions about goaltending? Like, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
Marcus Hogberg was, like, pretty good in Belleville last year. I hope he's pretty good again. It'd be good if he was eventually pretty good in Ottawa, but, you know, also 24.
Yeah.
Like, maybe his job is just to keep the seat warm until Philip Gustafson figures out what he's doing. Whose job is just to keep the seat warm until Mads Søgaard figures out what he's doing. Like, who's to say? I don't know anything about anything with it, with goaltending. So I just hope they have fun. That's it.
Like, somehow I'm following Andrew Hammond's, like, hilarious wife on Twitter because goaltending is that unpredictable.
Yeah.
But at some point it made sense for me to follow Andrew Hammond and his wife on Twitter.
In the middle of that run, you're just like, this guy will never leave Ottawa. He's a folk hero.
Yeah, bring him back, whatever. season slogan,
it's all part of the whatever. Of the zen.
All right, so I think where do we land here? Weirdly optimistic about enjoying hockey somehow.
Yeah, why not be optimistic, because how can things get worse?
That's true.
That's a serious question.
I gotta say, I was really happy for Craig, Ottawa's social media manager, seeing how much love there was for that Shabbat video after the re-signing. Makes it in 31 thoughts, thousands of likes and retweets. That's great. That's good to see. He's a good man.
Yeah, that's Craig Medaglia is the last untradeable asset the Ottawa Senators have at this point.
Traded for Derek Brassard.
No! All right, that's a podcast.
I'll
hope
do
you
some...
enjoy it, folks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This is episode 18, and we don't have an email, so don't email us.